So let's review a little bit what we did last time, and then we'll be able to go ahead, to go further. Last time, which in retrospect was an introduction to women saying Kaddish, turned out to be, in fact, an introduction to Kaddish generally. And what is the Kaddish, and what's the significance of the Kaddish, and so on. The main association that most of us have with Kaddish is the Kaddish that has to do with the mourner, even though if you think, maybe I'm misstating that, maybe that's not correct. Kaddish is something which is said in shul as part of the prayers. But the Kaddish, which is connected to the mourner, is something which, as far as I can tell, is unknown in Talmudic sources. Okay, so that's one thing which I hope that you saw last week. On the other hand, we saw that there is something wonderful, and that is to answer Yehesh Me Rabbah, which means that we saw is something which is very efficient, very effective, to answer to the Kaddish, but it didn't say anything about saying the Kaddish. There was this wonderful story that we found in a number of different Rishonim, who tell us the story of Rabbi Akiva, who meets this person who's dead, and who's carrying the wood to burn himself in hell, which is a wonderful image. And Rabbi Akiva, upon questioning, finds out that this person was a tax collector and he was a horrific person. Rabbi Akiva asks, is there anything that maybe you heard on the other side that can help you? So he ends up admitting that if he has a child who says Baruch Hu or causes the tzibur to say Yehesh Me Rabbah, so then that could help. And Rabbi Akiva tracks down the family, finds the wife who gave birth to a child who was never circumcised. He teaches him, he educates him, and at the end the kid says Kaddish, and the man comes to him in a dream and says, you know, you've helped me, and now I've been able to leave hell. Okay, so that's a wonderful story. And as I said, it's had a great amount of impact. Let's now move over, and again, those of you who do have the sources from last week, let's start with something which we saw briefly, and that's source number 10. This is the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Kuf Lamed Bet. Kuf Lamed Bet is the place that it talks about saying Kaddish. At the end of the davening, the Shulchan Aruch states, Hagah, this is from the Ramah, V'omrim Kaddish Yatom Achar Aleinu. That after Aleinu, the end of davening, that's when the Kaddish of the mourner is said. Okay, it's also interesting that it's specifically called Yatom, because there are other terms it could have used, of the orphan. V'yafilu ein Yatom b'beit ha-Knesset, and even if there were no Yatom in the Beit Knesset, Yomer Oto Mi She'ein Lo Av Ve'em, then somebody who lost parents, they're the ones who should say it. Excuse me? And even somebody who has parents should say it. And I explained this to you last time, that in essence, this is the Kaddish that ends davening and was not the mourner's Kaddish. It was a Kaddish at the end of davening. The Kaddish is found at various places in davening as some kind of a bookend, which ends a particular section. It divides between sections. It's a divider. And the very end of davening, there's a Kaddish which is said as well. And by the way, there is a question here, if this is the end of davening or this is post-davening. I know that doesn't sound like a...
That relates to women.
Correct. Is this part of davening or is this not part of davening? Why is this Kaddish here right now? Because if it's just a divider, there's nothing to divide anymore. Davening is over. Why is there a Kaddish at this point? And let's look at the Mishnah Berurah and see what he says in the following source, which for some reason... Bless you. It's not numbered. Kaddish Yatom, Achar Aleinu, Sharei La'olam Tzrichim Lomer Kaddish Achar Sha'omru Psukim, Uvaleinu Yishgamkin Psukim. So he says, no, after one says verses, one should say Kaddish. V'tzrichim Kaddish Acharav, Ela Shenahagu B'Kaddish Zeh, Leinichu Li Yatom, Shemet aviv imo, bepnei sheyesh yitomim ktanim, oh, afilu gdolim, she'enim yecholim liyot shlichei tzibur, velomer kadishu baruchu achar aviv v'imo, she'im hoyu yochlim t'palel lefnei amud, zetov yoter mimirat kadish. So let's go back and explain it word for word now. And the implication that I'm getting from him is that he understands... Where?
Either up or down. 25 kadish, not
4. That... No. That either the word yatom means somebody who doesn't have parents, or the word yatom could have the implication of somebody who's still a child. Somebody who, meaning, at what point is somebody considered an orphan in terms of Jewish law? Which means that there are all kinds of verses about how one is supposed to treat orphans. At what point is, which means if somebody is 75 years old and doesn't have parents, does the law about mistreating orphans apply to them? Perhaps it does. But the word yatom, normally when you think, oh, the person's an orphan, so to what age is a person considered to be an orphan? Absolutely. Right. Right. The halacha regarding an orphan is even someone who lost one parent. That would be the case. So therefore, the Hebrew yatom would even imply somebody who lost one parent. But again, I'm asking a question. To what age are you considered to be a yatom? Over here, my suspicion, I can't prove this, but my suspicion is that when the Shulchan Aruch said yatom over here, it was specifically speaking about somebody who was not bar mitzvah yet. Now, with that information, let's go back and read the Mishnah Berurah again. He says... The first part was that you always need it after Aleinu, and then he says, "Nahagu ele nahagu b'kadzeh le'nichol liyatom, shemet aviv imo," and it could be one or both. "B'bnei sheyesh yatomim ktanim." Now that also becomes very interesting. There are young orphans. Again, this is certainly the case below bar mitzvah. "O afilu gdolim she'enam yicholim liyot shluchei tzibur." They cannot be a shliach tzibur. They can't lead the davening. Now, what's bothering him? He's not saying it yet. What's bothering him? The whole story of Rabbi Akiva, which means if someone lost their parents and they do have to say this Kaddish, how can they say it? Or they want to say Baruch Hu, we saw as well. How can they say Baruch Hu? Because they're not old enough to be a shliach tzibur. And he says, and there are also some people that are older than 13 who are not worthy to be a shliach tzibur. V'lomer kaddishu Baruch Hu, achar aviv imo. She'im hoyu chlim d'palel lefnei ha'amud, zehu tov yoter mimirat kaddish. Because had this person be able to be a shliach tzibur, that would certainly be better. Now, this is very interesting, because this is telling us that there will be an allowance made for somebody who can't be a shliach tzibur to anyway to say kaddish. Now, how does this source help us? Yeah. So, based on this, then any of us can then say, okay, so why would it be any different if this person who can't be a shliach tzibur, why would it be any different if this person was male or female? Right? Again, I don't think we're reading anything into it which it doesn't say. That's exactly the case. It's saying that in a perfect world, somebody... What?
In a perfect world, the guy who needs to say kaddish should be the shliach tzibur.
Right. And the idea of saying kaddish, now we're learning, is only in the case where the person can't be a shliach tzibur. So, because if he was a shliach tzibur, how many times do you think he said kaddish during the davening? Right, he already had a bunch of, not only that, he got to say Baruch Hu. Now, I don't know if you've ever noticed this. At the end of davening, the person who says Kaddish at the end also says Baruch Hu. Have you ever noticed this? Do you notice this, that we never saw this in America? Or you do remember, or you don't remember this? So it depends what kind of Nusach you daven. The Ashkenazi custom was never to do this. People daven Nusach Sfarad, sometimes do, sometimes don't. Even Nusach Sfarad... it would most likely be that you'd only say Baruch Hu if somebody missed Baruch Hu, which by even according to the Ashkenazic custom, if people did say like Nusach Sfarad, you wouldn't say it on Monday or Thursday in the morning because then you had laning and you had another Baruch Hu, which was pretty much towards the end of davening. Unless somebody walked in the last 2 minutes, didn't hear Baruch Hu, then you would say Baruch Hu. But now you realize that this Baruch Hu over here may actually be part of that story of Rabbi Akiva, because the dream was, let him go to shul and say Baruch Hu. So that may be why at the end of davening, people insist on saying Kaddish, and in the end saying Baruch Hu as well, because the Baruch Hu is said to have this, together with the Kaddish, says has this magical power to it. And then he adds on, which is obvious that this is what he had in mind, V'kfar yadu m'maseh d'Rabbi Akiva to'elet ha'gadol she'yesh l'meit k'she'yesh lo ben ha'omer kaddish u'baruchu u'v'yoter b'toch shana harishona. How much help it has spiritually, the story from the story of Rabbi Akiva, when the son says kaddish or baruchu. L'kach tiknu v'hinichu kaddish zeh she'ein tzarech shum davar yoter liyutomim hein k'tanim hein gdolim. And therefore this was left for the orphans, be they under 13 or over 13, and that's all they have to do is say the one Kaddish, say the Baruch Hu, and then they're set. So therefore, let's just conclude this, because I think that this is very obvious and not difficult to understand, that there is a Kaddish at the end of davening, which normally should have been said. Why? Because there are verses said at the end. At the end of verses, a Kaddish is said, which makes it very similar to what's called the Kaddish Drabanan, which is said after we learn, which we did see from the Gemara. So the Gemara did have the Kaddish Drabanan, the Kaddish De'agarata, that was mentioned in the Gemara. What was not mentioned in the Gemara was the Kaddish of the Yatom, because apparently it wasn't known. I told you last week as well that there's a suspicion that perhaps after the Crusades, when there were so many Yatomim around, that then they needed to somehow find more Kaddishim for people to say, and you had all these Yatomim who were under 13, although we realize that that's a situation that could have arisen at any time and at any place, and maybe this is one of these times where people are making a historical assumption which may not actually be correct. But based on this source, we cannot figure out why a woman would not be able to say this Kaddish at the end, because if a boy under 13 can say it, and he is obviously ineligible to be the Chazan or Shliach Tzibor, so then it should be the same situation with the woman. And even after I do all the other sources I'm going to do today, we'll see how far we get, I'm not going to change from that understanding in this particular source from the Mishnah Berurah. The Ber Hetiv in source 11 brings up what should then to us be an obvious point. Kaddish Yatom, he's commenting on the same point, Safek Shemet Avivo Imo Yomer Kaddish. If you're not sure if one's parents died, then one does say Kaddish. Kishein Avil Acher, when there's no one else who needs to say it. Maharil, and so on and so forth. Skip to where it's underlined. Uvitshuvat Knesset Yecheskel Katav Didafka Ben HaBen Avo Ben HaBat Lo Yomer Kaddish V'Kolshkein Labat Ein La Kaddish Klal BeBeit HaKnesset. So, I skipped a little bit, but what he's talking about is grandchildren saying Kaddish for a grandparent, and he's talking about the difference between being the son of the father, between the grandson, where it's the mother's father or the father's father, and it's and you have to understand that there's a backdrop to all of this, and that is that it used to be that you only had one person say Kaddish, and if one person said Kaddish, you're also dealing with who has the right to say the Kaddish, and how that right is transferred on. But I'm not really so interested in the backdrop here. It's rather, let's read it again, and it's the second part of it which concerns me. Uvetshuva knesi yecheskel kotav tadafka beben haben avo beben habat lo yom kaddish. V'kol shkein labat ein lakaddish klal bibet hakneset. And certainly, the daughter has no kaddish to say bibet kneset. Now, first of all, we want to know why she has no kaddish and why she should be different from the boy who's under 13, but the other thing which bothers us is why did he throw in the words Bibbe Knesset? He should, if he wanted, is right, if he wanted to say that a woman doesn't say Kaddish, what would you say? A woman doesn't say Kaddish, but that's not what he writes. He writes, a woman doesn't have Kaddish, Bibbe HaKnesset. And then he continues, V'im rotzim lasot la minyan, reshut biyadam. But if you want to make a separate minyan for the woman, for this woman to say Kaddish, then you can. Now, this is a very funny point, and this is a point that we need to understand. First of all, what doesn't it mean? It doesn't mean to make a minyan of women. Why not? Because there's no such thing. A minyan is not 10 women. A minyan would be 10 men. So now, why is there a problem in a Beit Knesset, and why would this be solved if you had this minyan someplace else? And just to go with this a little bit, first of all, let's think very clearly what he did say and what he didn't say. He's bothered by a woman saying Kaddish in Beit Knesset. What's he not bothered by? By a woman saying Kaddish. For example now, if I were to take this source and say, would it be appropriate by a funeral if a woman wanted to say Kaddish at the funeral, would that be appropriate? So we could not figure out why there would be an objection based on what we just now read. As of this point, I can't figure out why there should be any objection one way or the other. His only objection was that a woman doesn't say Kaddish in shul. And again, based upon our previous source, where the Mishnah Berurah said that somebody who's under 13 can say Kaddish, we don't know what's the problem with a woman saying Kaddish. Okay? Source 12 is the Chavis Yair. His name is Rav Yair Bachrach. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, his real name was Chaim Yair Bachrach. He didn't get the name Yair until he was sick at one point, and then they added a name. That's what he writes in his introduction to his book. The other thing that he writes, I told you at least one time before, that he named the book after his grandmother, who was a very prominent woman. So it's Chaviz Yair. It's not Chavat Yair. Chavat Yair is not what he named the book. It was a name which was in Yiddish with a pun intended. He's his grandmother's grandson. And she, by the way, was a very, very prominent woman, a very important woman. She was widowed at a very young age, and she refused all kinds of offers for marriage afterwards, including some of the greatest rabbis in the world. She turned them down, and she was a very knowledgeable woman, and she ended up, very independent woman. She ended up dying at around 75 or so, I'm approximating the age, when she decided to move to Israel. And she was, again, an elderly woman, and she went by herself, and she ended up not making it all the way there, but she was determined that that's where she wanted to go. So the Chavat Yair, or the Chavis Yair, however you prefer, in Source 12, he writes, Shela Devar Zar, in Source 12, you already know that's good when he starts off by saying, Shela Devar Zar, regarding this strange matter, Na'asa Ba'amsterdam, Umifur Samsham, something that was done in Amsterdam and is quite famous in Amsterdam. She'achad ne'edar b'li ben, somebody disappeared without a son. It means died, really. V'tziva lefnei p'tirato, and he commanded before he passed away, she'yilmedu asara kol yom toch yud bet chodesh b'veito, b'schara. That 10 people come to his house every day for the 12 months, and they learn in his house. He'll pay them to learn in his house. He left money that they should learn in his house. The achar halimud, and after they finish learning, tomar habat kaddish. His daughter should then say kaddish. So now, based on everything we've seen till now, so what would the problem be with this? Other than the chavat yair thinking it's strange. Okay, it's strange. He never heard of such a thing before. Now, we got that out of the way. Still, right? Kaddish Dorabah. Now, does that make it better or worse? If you do know.
But understand that.
Well, the Kaddish in the davening, which serves as some kind of divider, so then... No, it's not. That would be Tekabel Tzlotan would be the one that sums it up, and that's the one before Eleinu. That's the one before Elena was the main Kaddish. A Kaddish after learning, why should that be? Why should that be? That's not part of davening. Let's say it much clearer. Excuse me? And that's the one that the Gemara said is actually the only one that the Gemara had mentioned as being a Kaddish. So one after learning, why should learning be? It's not part of the davening experience, correct? It's part of learning. Maybe. So we'll see about this. The other one you can begin to debate, is it almost davening, not davening? Here you're not in shul, so whatever the problem in shul is there. It's not part of the davening, it's not in shul. So what's... Right, that's the same kind of one. The same kind of kaddish of after learning. So what would be the problem over here? And he continues and he tells the strange story from Amsterdam. He says, V'lo michu biyadach ach me'akila v'parnasim. And no one protested. Which, what can you now conclude from this? That's what happened. That's the story. That's what happened. And someone obviously asked the Chavat Yair about this, and he cannot figure out why this should be okay, even though, to be honest, he also can't figure out why it's not okay. But you already see, in the way he formulates the question, you already see how he's going to be looking at it. He says that the people in the rabbis and the people in charge of the community, nobody protested. We'll go to where it's underlined. What I'm skipping is there. He says if the main function of let's read it. The afki ein ra'aya listor, even though I have no evidence contradicted. So again, you get the sense of where he's going. I've no way to contradict it. Listor davar ki gam isha mitzuvat al kiddush Hashem. Gam yesh minyan zechorim mikri b'nei Yisrael. So he's saying, okay, what is the fundamental purpose of Kaddish? And that is to sanctify God's name. Are women mitzuveh in Kiddush Hashem? Yeah, the same way that men are. There's no difference as far as the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So there, that's why he's saying, when it comes down to the basic point, and then why should a woman not be able to say it? Furthermore, if there are 10 men there, so there's a minyan, so what's the problem any further? The afki maaseh Rabbi Akiva shemeinu mekor amirat yitomim kaddish beben zachar haya, even though the story of Rabbi Akiva is by a male, mikol makom yesh sfarat degam bebat yesh toelet benachat ruach lenafsha ki zar ohi. He says logically, maybe based on that story, I can claim that a daughter should be the same thing. By the way, here I disagree with him, because what did that story say? The guy said that I left a wife who was pregnant. I don't even know if I have a son who then can say Kaddish. So if a daughter could say as well, why would it make a difference if he left a son or a daughter? So I do disagree with the Chava Yair in this, but again, before he's going to say no, he's even being more lenient. See, I'm going to end up saying yes. He's instead of saying no, but he's just maybe that should help. Mikol mokom yesh l'chush sha'ayidei kach. Nonetheless, we need to be concerned that because of an action like this, yichalshu koach haminhagim shel b'nei Yisrael, shegam kin torahim, that this will weaken the customs of the Jewish people, which is also considered to be Torah. And everyone will build their own bama. What is a bama? It's a place of personal sacrifice. This is the way that Avodah Zarah is always described in Tanakh, that a kol achad, under every leafy tree, they just made their own bama, which is really a symbol of personal, individual way of serving God, which again, the reference from Tanakh, is Avodah Zarah, la'atzmo al pisvarato, that everyone's going to do things based upon their own logic. Just one second. Umechzi milid rabbanon kechucha v'atlula. And the words of the rabbis will end up being kechucha v'atlula. Anyone know what that is? So look at Rashi in the next source. Kechucha, from the word l'chayech. Sok v'atlula leitzanut. So he says that everybody, everyone starts making up their own minhagim, they'll end up making a joke out of Judaism. Now, when we have to analyze this, there are two levels to this, obviously. One level is a halachic consideration, and one, he may call it a halachic consideration as well, but I would call it a meta-halachic consideration, which means it's a social consideration. Now, of course, what he's trying to do is to defend Jewish practice. The Chava Yair, by the way, was a brilliant man. Really, absolutely brilliant man, accomplished not just in Jewish learning, in terms of sciences, astrology, astronomy, I mean, all kinds of things. He really was the leading rabbi of his generation, around 300 years ago. And what bothers him over here is something which he's having a hard time to actually put his finger on exactly. He's saying, our customs are holy, and who knows how things can morph, or how things will change if you just let everybody do whatever they want to do, even though in terms of the halacha over here, he has a very hard time saying, no, this is absolutely wrong, because he can't find anything wrong. Yes? No, it's not a minion.
If the argument is, it is a minion.
No.
Men to go and learn so she can say Kaddish. Yeah. The problem here is boneh b'mala atzmo, meaning creating an alternative place of worship, and not necessarily an alternative practice.
No, I don't think that's what it means, because he's not talking about a minion in the sense of another place of davening. He's talking about learning. I know, but it's talking about people learning. And if you were to say to him, if there is somebody who wasn't learning, if you were to ask him the exact same thing by a male, he would not have the objection. Because if you're right, it should be the same problem should be in terms of a male, and he wouldn't have the objection. His objection of the bama la'atzmo is trying to change minhagim based on personal feelings. That's what he's saying. And again, his argument is interesting because if something was never done, then how can we allow it? And now, do you all appreciate we could take the exact same argument and go the other way around? Which means when a rabbi is approached about something that was never done before, do you say, well, that's terrible because no one ever did it? Or do you say, well, if there's nothing not allowed about it, so then why shouldn't it be allowed? This is not a simple question. Incidentally, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, for the exact same reasons, ended up saying that it's allowed for a woman to say Kaddish. Why? Because it's not allowed. And by the way, not just did he say this, he wrote an article about it, and his argument was the other way around. If we tell women, he's saying to rabbis, if we tell women that things that are allowed are not allowed, so then things which are not allowed, then they end up saying it's allowed because then we're making a joke out of it. What gives a rabbi a right of saying something which isn't allowed, to something that is allowed, to say it's not allowed? Now, again, you can all counter that by yourselves and say, hold it, we know there's a thing that you put a fence around the Torah. So what it really comes down to is, and where do you put the fence?
When you know it's a fence.
Okay, that's definitely a correct consideration. When do you put the fence? But it goes back to this point. If something is not allowed but has not been done, is the default that you say it's fine? Or is the default that you say, well, it's new and therefore it's not fine? Or, third possibility, does it depend on the case and what the other, perhaps, social considerations are? Which would... So it's interesting. We don't know. We don't know if this was the only time. We know that this case became famous. And we know that some people saw this as, okay, that's fine. Who did we see that said that's fine? Who else? That was quoted by the Be'er Heitev. What did he say? Yeah, if the daughter wants to say, and it's not in shul. So, I mean, this is the exact case that he's referring to. Which means... Am I imagining that? In source 11, he said, if you want to make a minyan for the woman to be able to say, so that means 10 men will come in and daven someplace other than the shul, so that would be fine, which means...
No, it's not really a bama, because there's no isor of gathering 10 people in your house, no 10 men, and having a minyan, you know what I'm saying?
Correct, so what is the bama? What does he mean by bama here? It's a metaphor for... using your own personal feelings to change practice in Israel. That's what bothers him. And by the way, let's recognize something. Whether he likes this or not, Judaism, in terms of practice, certainly evolves from place to place. Okay, that's without any question. The question is how much do you want to lead? Because when you lead it, it's not called evolution. Because when you lead it, then it's called revolution. So... really the issue over here is, do we let evolutionary processes take place or do we practice revolution? Now, some of the people dealing with this issue are revolutionaries and their agenda is to change practice. Other people are saying, you know, things will change from place to place and let nature take its course. Yes?
At what point does a minhag become a halakha, in a sense?
It's a very good question, and it's very difficult to answer. And part of it will be based upon how widely it was accepted. Now, even minhag, I mean, before you ask when a minhag becomes a halacha, when does practice become a minhag? I mean, I have a question before that even. The fact that somebody did something, when does it become a minhag? There is probably a dozen different cases, I once tracked them all down, where Moshe Feinstein will use the argument that something which is done occasionally is not a minhag. Can you make a wedding on Shavasa B'Tammuz, on the evening of Shavasa B'Tammuz before the fast? Does the three weeks start with the fast day, or does the 3 weeks start when the calendar says it's Shavasa B'Tammuz? So you know what? And by the way, the other secret here is that Ashkenazim are makbid from the 17th, Sfaradim are not. So if a Sephardi makes a wedding on the eve of Shavasa B'Tammuz, could an Ashkenazi go to that wedding? He said, no, it's already the 3 weeks, I can't go. Rav Moshe said that it's a very rare occurrence. By the way, how rare is it? It happens a couple times in every 10 years. couple times every 10 years he writes, no, that's not a minhag. There's no minhag one way or the other. Why? It's a rare occurrence. You can't call something which is a rare... What does the word minhag mean? Minhag is... Translate the word. Minhag is... Nahug. Minhag is custom. What does custom mean? It's what we do. If something happens twice every 10 years, it's not a custom. Okay, that's very interesting. Again, I would love to ask Rav Moshe, where do you draw the line about this? Where do you draw the line in terms of what is a personal custom, what is not a personal custom? Again, I told you last time, the Vilna Gaon's father asked him to say Kaddish of 12 months. Could the Vilna Gaon then say, okay, I said Kaddish of 12 months to my father, and let's say his mother died 25 years later, which is probably more or less the case. Can he say that was my custom then? Maybe it's not a custom. Again, is a custom something which is rare or not? So let's say a woman did do this. Does that make it a custom in Amsterdam? Let's say five women did it. Does that make a custom in Amsterdam? So before I can even ask when a custom becomes law, I first have to ask when a practice becomes a custom. So these things are not all that simple. Let's move on a little bit further. Yes? Never been there.
Oh, but have you heard of it?
I've heard of it.
So, like, I heard that some rabbanim say that according to halacha it's okay, but it's not done. So they shouldn't do it.
You asking me, you're telling me this, or are you asking me my personal opinion?
No, I was just bringing it as an example that you said, you know, if it's nahul or not.
That actually goes back to an earlier thing which I brought up. Something which is not asur isn't mutar. Something which is not prohibited, is it permitted? That's the question. Is everything not prohibited permitted? Okay, that's a fair question to ask. But what we also will need to appreciate is larger social considerations. Let's go back to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik for a moment. What's he facing when he says this? And he writes this article not all that long. I mean, he passed away already a number of years ago, but it was fairly late in his life when he wrote the article. I presume that was his psak earlier. Come soon to see other people who gave some interesting psakim about this as well. But his consideration is the same as the Chavat Ya'ir. There's nothing which prohibits it. Therefore, into this day and age, we should absolutely allow it. Again, now why is he saying that? Because he's saying that I know that there are women who are very nice women who feel that they want to say Kaddish. There's no prohibition to it, so then why should I tell them not to do it? Why should I be forcing them, you know, out the door? Now, some people ask me about women reading the Torah and Aliyot and so on and so forth. The people that, and I'm not sure yet if I'm going to have a whole class on it. I mean, does this really interest us or no? Maybe. But the people that are allowing it, some of them, the reason to allow it is a social consideration in terms of public policy, and it really comes down to where do we draw the lines in terms of orthodoxy? Should orthodoxy be from here to here, or if people keep kosher, if people keep Tarat Mishpacha, if people keep Shabbat, but they want to read from the Torah, so why should we force them out of the orthodox community and force them into the conservative community? Which means, again, if this is allowed, or let's put it the other way around, if there is not a prohibition, so why right now has orthodoxy been so afraid and saying, well, if you want an aliyah, then get out of our shul and go over to the conservative shul? Okay, that's a decent point. I'm not going to get right now into that issue in terms of where we draw the lines in terms of social policy. I will discuss in terms of halakha, and I told you this particular topic I do want to get to a conclusion today. Somebody else, another rabbi from Chicago. Anybody from Chicago here? There was the first page of the sources for today. Harav Moshe Leib Blair. Did you ever hear of him? He died in 1967, so you were probably very, very young then, if even born. I never... 1967, I checked out, I cannot figure out who he is. I cannot find anything else about him other than this. The only place that he's quoted is this pamphlet that he sent out to all the rabbis. If you look at the beginning of it, it says, Amirat Kaddish Ayidei Habad. He is very outgoing, very strong. You can read the whole thing. But he wants to know why should a girl not say Kaddish? And his agenda here is absolutely to change public policy. It's not allowed. Why shouldn't it be allowed? That's his consideration, and he goes on and on over all kinds of things that he claims over here, and the question was responded to. If you turn the page, I know it's upside down, and the bottom of page Gimel, do you see that? Siman Dalet. This is Rav Henkin. Being that we may have more than one Rav Henkin today, this is Rav Henkin, the grandfather. I told you last week that Rav Henkin, while he was alive, was either the most important posek in America or the second most important posek together with Rav Moshe Feinstein. These were the two main poskim. Over here, in Siman Dalet, Amir at Kadosh Yedei Habad, he writes, Nit'orarti lichtov ma'amar b'shem zeh al yedei hach tav nitpas hachozer chatum b'shem harav Moshe Leib Blair mi-Chicago al data mirat kadish yedei habat b'chdei lavi korat ruach l'mftav re'iti l'ver enyan kadish ve'ez ofin hu mevi korat ruach gam b'yir hakadish umin hagav. So he's telling us very clearly that Rabbi Blair's attempt to bring the discussion of women saying Kaddish into the public discourse worked. How do we know it worked? Because Rav Henkin responded to this. This book of the She'elot and Tshuvot of Rav Henkin was published very recently. And it's actually amusing because his grandson, who I happen to have his book over here, B'nei Banim, his grandson writes about it. And in the middle of writing about it, he then writes a footnote and says, oh, I just found my grandfather's writings, and I found that he'd written an article about this, and afterwards he publishes them all, and he puts them all in a book. So, again, the interesting thing is the grandson's writings were published before the grandfather's writings, even though there was an article that was published in some obscure rabbinic journal someplace in America some 50 years ago, or not exactly, but close. Because this letter, Siman Dalet, is signed, 1 second, Tufshin Zion. Tufshin Zion is 1947. Okay, 1947 is when, what's also interesting, yeah. What's also interesting is he came back to the question later on at a later juncture in time, and his two answers were not exactly identical. But I do want to read a little bit about what he writes over here. First, he makes the obvious point that Kaddish is in terms of Kiddush Hashem. Okay, so source number two. We have that on the top of the next page. Amud Vav in his writings. Valdat Kaddish im nera yuchula lomar Kaddish v'bei Knesset hine kfar dibru b'zeh ba'achronim. He says that the rabbis already wrote about this. Now listen to his next line. You have it? It says number two on top of the page here. Page, okay. He says, "Ubekol zot zachruni shebiyalduti amra na'ara kaddish lefnei ha'anashim b'ki'ila shel chasidim v'yireim." He says, "I remember in Europe as a young boy, I remember a girl saying Kaddish in shul in front of the men." What? If you think that's amazing, I'll pause here for a second. Joe Walowski wrote a very good article. It's published in Judaism for the summer of 1995. He spends the first part of the article speaking about a woman saying a birchat hagomel. So we'll come back to that in a second. But when, so I'll read to you a little bit of this. Almost a quarter of a century ago, so from 1995, that would be closer to 40 years ago almost, right? Almost a quarter of a century ago, when the issue came up at a chapter of Yavne, the National Religious Jewish Students Association. Any of you remember Yavne? Okay. I asked one of the Yavne student leaders, who was then learning with the Rav Soloveitchik, to put the question to him. Rav Ezra Bick, now at Yeshivat Har Etzion, wrote back, "I spoke to the Rav about the question you asked concerning a girl saying Kaddish. He told me that he remembered being in Vilna in the Gaon's Klois. The Gaon's Klois is the shul of the Vilna Gaon. And he writes over here, I assume that this is his comment, which wasn't one of your modern Orthodox shuls. And a woman came into the back, because there was no Ezrat Nashim, and said Kaddish after Maariv. I asked him whether it would make a difference if someone was saying Kaddish along with her or not. He replied that he can see no objections in either case. It's perfectly all right. Then he continues. Okay, so you can say Rabbi Soloveitchik taught in YU. Coincidentally, checking around, I came across a number of people who remember such incidents from Europe, including my father, the author writes, well, in my grandfather's minyan, and he was the rabbi of the town. The girls would come in. Indeed, many people remember such occurrences. For example, Rabbi Pinchas Zelig Prag, Gabbai of the Mir Minyan. Okay, again, we're not talking about the famous Brooklyn Shul of the Corps, whose members were former students of the Mir Yeshiva, who came to America after Second World War by way of Shanghai, told me that one of the congregants, Rav Moshe Maruch, who was born and raised in Vilna and who studied at the Mir Yeshiva, recalled that when his cousin died, leaving an adult daughter, no sons, Rav Chaim Ozer Gudzinski had allowed her to say Kaddish daily in the synagogue, and another person from that minyan recalled Chafetz Chaim had similarly ruled. Professor Yaffa Eliach relates a similar occurrence in her study of El Loshuk. Tzipora Hutner Kravitz, wife of Rav Yosef Kravitz, recalled to Dr. Eliach that in 1935, when she was 14 years old, her brothers were out of town when her father, Rabbi Naftali Menachem Hutner, the dayan of the town, died. She said Kaddish at the graveside, continued to say Kaddish in both the town's new Beit Midrash and Shtiebel until her brother returned. She recalled that at the same time, a woman named Gittel Gordon, then 18 years old, said Kaddish in the Shtiebel. Another townsman recalled that when girls said Kaddish, they wore a beret, stood in the men's section, in the first row to the right of the Amud. And then he quotes what I just now read from Rav Henkin. Rav Yosef Elio Henkin also recalled in his youth, young woman said Kaddish. He allowed women to say Kaddish in shul, provided they remained in the women's section, which we're going to see, ironically, becomes the big fight in terms of the women's section becomes the problem. Rabbi Soloveitchik also insisted on the women staying in the women's section. And then he has Professor Blidstein. He asked him, and Professor Blidstein, right, again, is saying the following. I spoke to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who had the same reaction, namely, he couldn't figure out why it shouldn't be allowed. And he said he would ask the Rav, which he did, when I was on the other end of the phone. Rav Lichtenstein put the question to him, and then he directed to ask me whether the girl was stationed at Ezrat Nashim. I, of course, answered in the affirmative. The Rav said, then, of course, she can say Kaddish. Okay. Now, I just now gave you a list of all kinds of people who said that it's fine. If that's the case, maybe everything at this point now sounds like a moot point. I do want to continue in Rav Henkin, because Rav Henkin was severely attacked once he published this. As I said, it was in a little obscure place, but he was attacked. The tshuva that he writes over here in Tafshin Zion, he goes on to say something which I quoted to you last week. First he tells the story of the girl, and then he continues, says, V'yadua, kvod, whatever, sha'af kadish shel anashim im einu mer'uin liyot shliach tzibur, yesh lefak pek bo harbe. The truth is that even if a man say kaddish, if he's not worthy to be a shliach tzibur, one should doubt. Sh'rei kol ha'omer kaddish b'tzibur hu me'ein shliach tzibur. Whoever says the kaddish is de facto like the leader of the congregation at that point. V'shliach tzibur tzer shi'agun. He has to be appropriate. Nonetheless, when it comes to Kaddish, we'll see, we lighten the standard somewhat. Had it not been for the Kaddish, many people would never teach their sons to daven. They wouldn't go to shul. And if people come every even the once a year to say Kaddish, it strengthens them for the whole year. By the way, this now he just went to public policy. He goes, for the same reason, we shouldn't push away girls, because when she said Gorim hitkarvut liyadut, that saying the Kaddish will bring them closer to Judaism. The im tetchok v'tikanes lefnim meha mechitza. And if they push and they come in to the other side of the mechitza, bishat Kaddish, Mikavin shem istama gam achrim omim kaddish. It must be that other people are saying kaddish. Ki aminach achshav sherabim omim kaddish lo echpat lan. This doesn't bother us. Which leads us to another point. In the olden days, I told you this last time, only one person said kaddish. If a bunch of people are saying kaddish, so he says, so what's the problem if she wants to come into the men's side and say kaddish as well? And the others that said, no, a woman shouldn't do it, that was a time that only one person said kaddish. If a whole bunch of people saying kaddish, what does it make a difference if a woman is saying it as well? She shouldn't stand on top of the bima. In the olden days, the person who led the kaddish stood up by the bima as he led the prayers. He goes, wouldn't be appropriate for this girl to come up and stand in front of the bima. And now that each person stands in their place, and many people say it, you certainly shouldn't push this away with two hands. And nonetheless, he feels that she should stand on the other side of the mechitza. Look at the bottom of Daf Chet, which is the last side over here, the last paragraph. Here you have him returning to the topic in Tuf Shin Kaf Dalet. I did not read to you the whole tshuva. You can enjoy reading it yourselves if you so choose. V'navol inyan hatza'a shel kaddish labat. I want to come back to this suggestion about girls saying kaddish. Im abat tavol itpalel be'ezrat nashim v'tachshir ma'aseh b'kdushat shabbat, kashrut, v'tahara, v'tzni'ut, shekol zem hikarim. If this girl is somebody who takes Judaism seriously in terms of kashrut, tahara, tzni'ut, and so on, which are the important things, v'tichvot lomar gam kaddish b'pnei anashim, and also wants to say kaddish in front of the women, bizman she'omim kaddish b'pnei kneset shel anashim, at the same time that the men are saying on the other side of the mechitza, efshar she'en k'peda. By the way, he came a little bit more careful as he got older. What does it mean, efshar she'en k'peda? It sounds like there's no objection. Aval im tavol b'pnei kneset shel anashim, but if she should come to the other side of the mechitza, which what do we know now? That he himself tells us that that's what happened in Europe. By the way, when I said before, I'm not sure when to call it a custom. Am I willing to call the custom in Europe was for girls to say Kaddish? No, I'm not willing to say that. What am I willing to say?
It happened.
Okay. We're good. One second. Let's continue. Aval im tavol beknesset shel anashim afilu b'levushet tzniut. And if a woman should come to the men's side, even if she dressed modestly, you like the next part, America, it's certainly the way that American women dress, no offense, Shehim Hefech HaKdusha, which is the opposite of holiness, Sheikara Prisha Meharayot Vabizrayu, Shem Kol Mareo Pritzut HaMobushim Kol Zehu Hefech Mekidush Shem Shemayim, meaning, This is This is Tuf Shin Kaf Dalet. This is 1964. This is 1964, and he's saying, if a girl who's trying to do Kaddish, to elevate the soul, and comes in dressed, as women dress in America, into the men's section, he says, you're not creating holiness by doing this. Quite the opposite. Umizeh yesh tsar lahaniftarim, v'lo korat ruach klal. That will cause pain to the dead and not anything good. He goes, but let's admit it, they shouldn't be dressing this way out of the shul either. The shul is the last fortress. Will we have any hope for holiness to remain? And if something would happen to the shul, then all could be lost. And may God give us help to sanctify the Jewish people. And again, this is a very interesting tshuva. You put this together with the other one, you already realize that he doesn't object to it. What happened, though, and this is what his grandson ends up going into the whole discussion, he was attacked because he said that they should say it in the Ezrat Nashim. And the people that attacked him, including some people in America, they attacked and they said, well, Ezrat Nashim is not necessarily part of the shul. Now, I have to stop here for a second. This is what drove one of the women who wrote about this, I won't quote her name, but she's a very nice feminist woman whose agenda is clear, that women just say, God, she went crazy on this. What do you mean that Ezrat Nashim is not part of the shul? How can this be? So it can be. Let me back up, and I'm not going to get into this whole topic, but it depends how the shul is built. If a shul is built where you have a room for men and a second room for women, it's a different room, and there is a hole in the wall, the people in that other room are not in the shul.
Tell us about it.
Your shul's okay.
Not my shul.
I just said your shul's okay. So, a shul with two different rooms, the women, or for that matter, let's say it's Sunday morning and a man comes late and goes into the women's section, which I don't know if you know this, men do that. I'm sorry if you feel that you've been attacked by this just now. Men, if they do come late, a little embarrassed of walking to the men, they will go into a women's section and they're not in, if they're in such a thing, they're not in shul. They're not part of the, which means if you have six men in the men's section and four in the women's section in a shul like that, you don't have a minyan. Now, most shuls in America were not built like this. You can now, each and every one of you now can think back, if they have a common ceiling, okay, for lack of any other way, because we're not going to get into architecture now, if they have a common ceiling, then already it's much more likely that it's one room. Because it's not, but that's what I'm getting to right now.
But even if it is under the same, like,
No. So that's why you have to be so careful. That in halacha, you can have people say, "Oh no, women's section is not part of the shul. You can do other things that doesn't have to shop bek neset." Stop. The fact that there is a mechitza there doesn't necessarily make a difference. For example, there are lots of shuls that will have a total mechitza made out of wood by the bima. You know, like some of these old shuls where they read the Torah, you have a whole wall. Right? On all four sides. That doesn't mean that whoever's standing there is not, that Kriyat HaTorah is in the Mechitza. No, because they have the common ceiling. So once you have the common ceiling, it's much more likely. If the Mechitza goes all the way up to the ceiling, so then it becomes a little bit more problematic. But if you think about a lot of the shuls in America, you think about the shul certainly where it's one floor, or the women's section is slightly raised, there's one ceiling, and there's a Mechitza which goes up, depending on who they asked, either 3.5, 4 feet, 5 feet, and again, that doesn't make it, 6 feet, doesn't make a difference, but if the ceiling is 20 feet up and the mechitza only goes part of the way, they're in the same room. Now, it's possible when they built the shul, they built the whole shul as a tnai, that this is not a shul, this is a Beit Midrash. In a shul, you can't eat. The halacha in a shul, you cannot eat. But in a Beit Midrash, you can eat. What's the difference? A Beit Midrash, people learn. So the place that you learn, you live. The place that you live, you can eat. A shul is a place that you daven, you cannot eat in a shul. But if they built a shul and they said, no, this shul we're building, b'tnai, we're building it as a Beit Midrash, so if we daven here as well, then it has a different level of Kedusha. So it's possible that in some shuls, when they built the shul, they said the men's section were building with Kedusha Beit Knesset, the women were building it with the t'nai as a Beit Midrash or something else so people can eat there, or maybe they have Shalosh Shudas, whatever. Again, each shul is different. But he was attacked on this point by saying, if a woman's in the women's section, how can she say Kaddish because she's not in the same room with them? So his grandson goes and defends and says, what are you talking? And again, this is the point that drove this lady crazy. But he goes and defends and says, my grandfather lived in America for most of his life. Most of the shuls in America, the women's section, is in the same room as the men's section. And therefore, for a woman to say Kaddish, it's not a problem. Let's recap a bit, and I want to do one more source. The recapping is, really the question is something which is not prohibited, is it permitted? That's really the question that we dealt with today. Go to the last page in the sources from last week. This is the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is generally, as a good Hungarian, a little more strict, a little more conservative. Habat ein la lomer kaddish bebeit knesset. Again, habat ein la lomer kaddish bebeit haknesset. A girl doesn't say kaddish in shul. Last source, 17. Page 817. Ach yesh omrim she'im rotzim lasot minyan bebeita she'tomar sham harashut biyadam. V'yesh omrim degam zot ein la asot. Now, part of what Rav Henkin did in this whole approach is he threw out all of this problem. He goes, oh, in the old days when they said the girl shouldn't say it in shul, why? Because in shul they're talking about the Ezrat Nashim in Europe. The Ezrat Nashim in Europe was in a different room. So that's why she shouldn't say it there. Today, it's not a problem. Again, Rav Henkin, what does he say? I remember girls saying to the men, he said it's okay. And he says, therefore, in the women's section, it's okay. Why? So any of these sources that said, oh, she shouldn't say it in the women's section, he goes, no, that's in the women's section, was in a different room. That's the prohibition. But Kaddish is allowed for women. How do I know? Because all those sources that said that she can do it at home. But he says in a woman's section, which is part of the same Beit Knesset as a men's section, Rav Henkin said, so what's the problem? And even those who said, no, a woman shouldn't say it, we're talking about in a case where only one person said it. Which, by the way, that itself, I'm going to tell you, is not a convincing argument, because they would let a boy under 13 say it. So if that's the case, then that really shouldn't be a difference if it really is in the same room. In the last paragraph, Sif Kaf Bet, the Kitzer writes, Afal pisha mirat hakadish vahatfilot mo'ilot la'avot, mikol makom ein elu ha'ikar, even though kaddish and tfilot helps one's parents, it's not the main thing. Ela ikar hu sha'banim yelchu ba'orach mishar, that the children should go in a proper path, ki bizehim ezakim et ha'avot. That's how they elevate their parents. V'yesh l'adam l'tzavot b'nav l'achzik b'eza mitzvah, a parent should instruct their kid to be strong with a particular mitzvah, v'im ekamim nechshav yoter min ha'kaddish. And if a parent gives an instruction to a kid, I want you to try to do this mitzvah for me, and he does, that's worth more than the kaddish is worth. V'hu takanat tova gam l'misha'in l'banim el banot. And he says that this works very well for someone who doesn't have sons and other has daughters. I want to get to, again, as I said, a conclusion for today. People get very emotional about the kaddish. Men act very childish and brutish when it comes to kaddish. If, God forbid, we still had the minhag of only one person saying kaddish in shul, I don't know what would happen. You would have fights breaking out in shul, which probably would happen. They probably had fights. Right, I know. I mentioned that last week, and it's more proper in terms of the custom. So here you have a law that was dealt with, I'm sure, in order to create more peace. But on the other hand, anybody who has any sense, let's say you do have a shul and one person says Kaddish. Anybody who has any sense, before you start getting into a fight who's going to say Kaddish, realize that any fight that you're having to say Kaddish is a chilul Hashem. Any fight that you have, well, it's my yurt side, I want to daven for the yomit, any of those things are worse. And there's been more than one occasion that I've told people who've come up, different people had yurt side, I've said, for you not to be engaged in a fight, for you to back down and give in to the other, I guarantee you will cause your parent more nachat ruach than for you to daven after, you know, there's going to be bad blood. I said, I guarantee you in heaven. Don't ask me how I can give these guarantees. I absolutely guarantee it that's better. Regarding women saying Kaddish, I spent all of last week really trying to convince you that the Kaddish is not so important. I don't know if I succeeded or didn't succeed. All the Gemara sources that we saw said the main thing is not to say the Kaddish. What was the main thing? To answer Yehesh Merabah. You can do that effectively in a men's section. You can do that effectively in a women's section. If a woman came over and asked me the question, my parent passed away, should I say Kaddish? My answer would be no. If they asked me, or maybe I would ask another question, do you want to say Kaddish? If they said, yes, I want to say Kaddish, then my answer would be yes. It's just as simple as that. But I would add that I don't think in most communities that we live today it would be appropriate to say it demonstrably out loud and so on. Why? Because that more likely than not will cause a fight. And if you cause a fight by saying Kaddish, then again, I think that spiritually it's counterproductive. To say a Kaddish quietly, as it is in most shuls, more than one person is saying. And if there is a shul that for some reason they don't say Kaddish at the end, then it's absolutely right to say, please say Kaddish. And you can ask that from the women's section as well, please say Kaddish at the end. Because it's appropriate to have Kaddish at the end of davening. And the irony is that because we gave this Kaddish to the Yatomim, when there's no Yatomim, people don't say it at all. That is a mistake. There should be Kaddish said at the end. But any time that anybody says a Kaddish, men or women, and it causes a fight, so then I can't help. Again, I don't think the Kaddish is magic. I don't think that we're dealing with magic. We're dealing with creating Kiddush Hashem. And if trying to create a Kiddush Hashem one creates a fight or chilul Hashem or zilzul or whatever else, so then I can't imagine how spiritually is effective, because again, you're not dealing with a magical formula that if you say these words, it somehow it causes an elevation. And therefore, throughout the years and most of the past 1,000 years, the custom of Ashkenaz was for one person to say Kaddish. And all those other people in shul that didn't get to say Kaddish, but they accepted it and they answered Yehei Shmei Rabbah, I refuse to believe that none of them caused elevation for the parents. So quite the opposite. Is that accepting that they were raised in a way that they weren't going to get into a fight, raised into a way that they're going to be respectful people, raised in a way that respects the Kedushat Beit Knesset, I don't think that any of those things cause spiritual damage. Again, the opposite is true.
Why do people go nuts trying to get 2-3 minyanim a day and don't travel during the year in the event that they'll miss,
custom,
on Tuesday,
custom, and not be able to say custom and guilt. Yes.
If there are no sons,
yes.
Then should a woman say? Or is it better to still pay a man to say?
That was really the question that Rabbi Blair was dealing with. That's really his topic. He goes, why they pay a man? Why should they pay someone else to say it? I don't know what to say. I'll go back to my point before. If a woman feels she wants to say Kaddish, and maybe because there's no sons, that's one of the reasons she wants to say Kaddish, she feels that she wants to, as long as a Chilul Hashem is not created in the process, then why? Then I don't see why it should be a preference to pay a man. I don't see why that should be a preference. But again, I'm just trying to say, let's look at the larger picture and not look at the smaller point over here. The larger picture is that we want to live lives of Kiddush Hashem, and not to cause fights and other things. Again, whoever made up this Midrash Rabbi Akiva, and again, I'll allow that maybe this is possible. There was a long silence of this. From the time that Rabbi Akiva died till we find this Midrash, over 800 years went by. Whoever published this and spread this around, it was brilliant PR, because this worked. This got right into the guts of Jewish people. You got to say Kaddish, and you got to say 3 times a day, and you know, and so on and so forth. But that most Jews, for most of history, did not do this. Yes. You know why? That may even be true by a man. There's a couple issues. One issue is how much does a woman have to daven a day? So therefore, according to some opinions, women only have to daven 1 time a day. So if they say Kaddish once a day, they say Kaddish when they daven. So therefore, if a woman davens mincha every day, so there's some opinions that she's filled her mitzvah of davening. So it doesn't mean you need to be more than that. As far as how much a man has to say Kaddish, it also could be 1 time a day. I told you that Chabad has a funny custom that they believe that each Kaddish gets you 1 hour out of hell. So they each try to say it at least 24 times a day. And therefore, at the end of davening, they say another Tehillim, and another Tehillim, and another Tehillim, and they're counting how many Kaddishes they got. And again, now you're back to magic. That not only is it magic, I know exactly what how effective each one is. Okay, he's safe for another hour now. Yeah. Look, it would be recommended. The one thing that I didn't say clearly today, and look, death is something which is horrific, and death is something which is a lot of emotion and a lot of guilt sometimes, and we want to do something. And we have a problem over here. The problem is that men have something to do and women don't have something to do.
Excuse me.
Yes? No, I agree. I agree. But I understand how a woman can say that I lost my parent, and now how is it that I have nothing to do? So I think that the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch's point was actually very well taken. There's lots of things that somebody can do in order to try to cause a Kiddush Hashem, an elevation of a soul. Okay, I hope that this was all clear enough.